Okay. So we have a mitzvah coming up in the next week, which is a little bit more perhaps enjoyable than the mitzvahs associated with the Aseret Yemei Teshuva, if one wants to see it that way. And that is mixed among all these fasting days, is we have a mitzvah to eat. And the Gemara tells us that in a number of places. And it seems like this is a Dimen HaTorah. Although, the Gemara darshans the same pasuk in two ways, which is itself an issue that the Rishonim take up. But the pasuk in Parshas Emor seems to, on the surface, misidentify the date of Yom Kippur. And that would certainly be a problem. That's not a date you want to get wrong. That's a date on many levels important to get right. But nonetheless, the pasuk talks about fasting on the 9th of Tishrei. So the Gemara tries to figure out what would that mean, because as far as we're generally acquainted, the fast of Yom Kippur takes place on the 10th of Tishrei. So why would the Torah talk about fasting on the 9th of Tishrei? So the Gemara actually has two answers to this question, and we assume both of them are relevant. Both of them are practiced, which is itself interesting. One of them is that this is actually its own sugya, which is certainly worthy of discussion, and impacts Maseches Brachos also, and impacts all kinds of Yom Tov Dinim, and that is the concept of Tosefes. So the notion, Shemikan Shemosifin Michol HaKodesh, that the Torah would talk about fasting on the 9th of Tishrei, because we have to also be fasting on the 9th. We start our fast when it's still the 9th of Tishrei. And according to most of the Rishonim, that is not only about Yom Kippur, but it's about every Shabbos and Yom Tov. And God willing, we'll probably find time over the course of the year to get into that sugya, and we'll find that indeed that's how we assume that it applies to every Yom Tov without exception, with the possible exception of Rosh Hashanah and the first day of Sukkot and the first day of Pesach and the first day of Shavuos and Tisha B'Av. But other than that, it applies to every Yom Tov without exception. Meaning that basically every Yom Tov is some kind of a quirk that makes it different, and Shmini Atzeres also. But other than that, it applies to every Yom Tov without exception. But as a general rule, the assumption that basically there's a klal, that there's a rule of Tosefes Shabbos and Yom Tov for everything. The major exception is the Rambam, that the Rambam only applies it, at least min HaTorah, the whole discussion whether it's different midrabanan, but at least min HaTorah, the Rambam applies it to only the literal reading of the Pasuk, so he only applies it to Yom Kippur. And even within Yom Kippur, only to exactly what the Pasuk is talking about, which is Inui Yom Kippur, and not to the Isser Malacha on Yom Kippur. But most of the other Rishonim understand this is a reference to Kedusha overall, meaning all Shabbos and Yom Tov. So that's one drasha that the Gemara has on this pasuk. But what we're focused on today is that the Gemara in our Masechta, in Maseches Brachos, that Daf Ches, understands another din from this pasuk, which is really more of a drasha, because the other reading is one that is also a drasha, but comes more out of a little bit of a literal reading of the pasuk, because that Tosefes, that involves actually fasting on the 9th, so that's a little bit more of a literal reading. But this other din is a little bit more of a drasha, and that is the idea of Kala Ochel B'Shoseh B'Tishrei Ma'ala B'Kasev Ki'ilu Hus'aneh Tishrei B'Asiri, that if you eat and drink on the 9th of Tishrei, so then it is counted for you as if you fasted on both days. And the Gemara in Brachos actually brings that up in a pretty interesting context, the very challenging Din Drabanan, which we'll also, God willing, talk about in its own context, of Shnei Mikra V'Echad Targum. So we soon have the opportunity to renew our commitment to that Din coming up. So about to restart Brachos. So that, the Gemara talks about, the familiar feeling of not being able to find time throughout the year to get that done on a regular schedule. And the Gemara talks about one who wanted to try to get the whole year done on Erev Yom Kippur. And the response was that, no, that's not a good idea for two reasons. One is that it's supposed to be done on a regular schedule. Chayev Im HaTzibur. So Shnayim Mikra is supposed to be done together with the Tzibur. It's not all supposed to be done all in one day. And also, if you're going to pick one day to do the whole Torah, so Erev Yom Kippur would not be the day, because you're busy on Erev Yom Kippur, because that's the day that you're supposed to be eating and drinking. So for that reason, this is not a good day for your whole eating project, for your whole learning project, and better to push that off for a better day, but really better to do it Seder. And in that context, the Gemara brings in this din. So, what exactly is this din about? It sounds like this is a drasha min haTorah, and the Kesef Mishnah, if you saw in Hilchos Nedarim, talks about the nature. Is it a nesmacht or is it a drasha gemura? But we do treat this as a din. The weight of the din is interesting, because theoretically, these two dinim that are derived from the same pasuk, itself a discussion how you get them both from the same pasuk, but they could come in conflict with each other. Right? It could happen that if you wait too long on Erev Yom Kippur, so you may have to choose between eating an Erev Yom Kippur or bringing Yom Kippur in early, bringing the fast of Yom Kippur early. What happens if you haven't left enough time? So then you're going to have to choose one or the other. So that was actually a discussion in the Achronim, which one of these two dinim takes priority if you're in such a narrow zone that you're going to have to choose one or the other. It was a discussion between the Shuvas Machz Avram and the Shuvas Ksav Sofer. And that's a whole debate, but that certainly then seems to work off the premise that this is a real din that at least can do battle against the other real din of Tosefes Inui that is derived from this pasuk. Because again, all the Rishonim agree that Tosefes Inui is certainly a din min haTorah. Most assume that Tosefes Yantif Bechlal is a din min haTorah, but even the Rambam, everyone agrees that Tosefes Inui is a din min haTorah. One thing that everyone agrees also is that we wouldn't go so far as to say that it's enough to allow, for example, eating treif. If all the only food you have is non-kosher food, that we would say that it's that powerful of a din. And you wouldn't say esse dochalosa, say, for example, to that extent, although it is a discussion in poskim. Sorry?
What about derabanan?
See, also not, but it's also a discussion. You know, why not? The nature of the whole dynamics here, but we don't assume that we go that far, but it is a din that we assume is a genuine din otherwise. Yes, sir.
How long is the minimum shear for Tosefes that would actually come in conflict with your ability to eat?
So that's a good question, and it's its own sugya, so we won't get into all the nitty-gritty right now, but you can imagine a scenario, whatever it is, that there's literally not enough time to handle both, and it's also going to get to the question of what's the shear of eating. So both of those would require somewhat of an analysis in order to figure out what the scenario is. It also could be some Metzias question in terms of what you have access to and other kinds of details, so we won't try to do the math, but let's just say whatever the numbers are, that you have to choose between one or the other, so theoretically you could have a conflict between these two dinim that both come from the same pasuk. So then what would you do? So with that, assuming, okay, so we do have this real din of eating on Erev Yom Kippur, so what exactly is it about? So you probably got to see that there are a range of interpretations as to what the purpose of this din is. And the truth is, even if you did get to see that a little bit, you probably didn't get to see the full sweep, that there are a number of interpretations that are suggested in the Rishonim, and there are many more in the later literature. This is something that has been much speculation around, and there are many more creative interpretations the later literature. But even just starting with the Rishonim, so there are at least two or three or more basic approaches to what is being conveyed here. So how would you understand what's out there in terms of what the purpose of this din is? Did you?
It's to prepare for the fast day.
Okay, so one approach is that it's to prepare for the fast day. Now, even within that, so let's start with that. Let's start with the idea that it's to prepare for the fast day. So that also could break off into a couple of possibilities. But expand on that a little bit. How would you say, what would you mean by that when you say that it's...
It's like a hachana for a deraisa.
And expand
as in like you have to fast, it's a deraisa. So how do you prepare for the upcoming deraisa? You eat so that biologically that helps you be less hungry the next day.
Okay, so...
Well, it makes it easier... It makes it easier to fulfill the deraisa the next day.
Okay, so that's worth expanding on a little bit what that means. So, you know, one is you could say just that it's Rachmanis, that Kadosh Baruch Hu wants to make sure you don't suffer too much. He's the ultimate Jewish mother. In this case, you know, Jewish father and Jewish mother. So, you know, I don't want you to suffer while you're fasting. Yeah, Yehuda?
I mean, there's an additional idea of making it easier for us to then concentrate on the davening.
Okay, so that's also interesting. Question, did you see that spelled out in the Rishonim, or did you see that?
I believe I did.
Okay.
I have to find exactly where, but I will.
Okay, so, but it's interesting to address whether that's a part of it or that's something that we're interpreting. So is it a hachana in a sense for the day, in that it makes the day more bearable by making the fasting less of a distraction? Eric?
To be a pseudo asyantif.
So that's already a different thing. That's there, yeah, and we'll come back to that, but that's a different track. That's definitely a theory, but it's a different theory. But let's focus on the hachana component. So this hachana component has a couple of aspects to it. Yeah?
I just saw this, maybe it's not going to be worked out so well, but we've talked about like the idea of like a ma'aseh mitzvah and a kiyum mitzvah.
Mm-hmm.
So I heard that like a kiyum mitzvah maybe of fasting. So by eating a lot and then fasting, by showing like that specific set off. I mean, that's like with the ma'aseh mitzvah, like eating the kiyum mitzvah is to stop eating.
That's very interesting. So that you have to go up until the last minute and keep eating.
Yeah, a little bit to stop us obviously for other purposes, but I mean to show that this is us eating, I guess maybe.
Okay, you know, there's something to that, although I wouldn't say necessarily you have to go up until the cutoff point,
yeah.
But basically to show that you're not uninterested in eating, to show that you're eating the rest of the time, and that the fasting is deliberate.
Yeah.
Okay, so there is such a notion as well. So on the surface, you do find expressed here that the idea is to make the fast easier, but it's an interesting question, so why do we care? So why do we want to make the fast easier? So especially because you seem to find the language, the Gemara, sounds a little bit like it's going in the other direction. That what do you accomplish by eating? Ki'ilu hisana tshi v'asri, v'asiri. Right? So it says, if you fasted both days. So first of all, like the Beis Yosef discusses, so, well, is it a goal to fast both days? You know, so let's say, yay, it's as if you fasted both days. Well, then what? So did anyone say you should be fasting 2 days? And then, as the Beis Yosef asks, well, then what if I actually do fast 2 days? So shouldn't that be counted as if I fasted 2 days? So, but then that would seem to be against the din, right? Because we're saying, and it comes out from other sugyas, that it sounds like it's actually an issur to fast on the ninth, and that would be strange because here that should literally be Kiyilu Hosana Tshuvi Basiri, and yet then I'd be violating an issur. Yeah, Yehuda.
Right, especially with how the Ritva explains it. Mm-hmm. Like, why do we then have to compare it to as if we were commanded to fast on the ninth and we also fast on the ninth? Why can't we just say we were commanded to eat on the ninth and we did eat on the ninth?
Well, okay.
They remove it twice. Why can't it just be there like it is? And it works well as well.
Very good question, right? And the Ritva quotes to Rabbeinu Tam on that point, right? So this is itself something that needs to be figured out a little bit. So the Ritva himself has an interesting perspective, the way he closes off his understanding of this. Some understand that, okay, we want to make it easier because it's a Kadosh Baruch Hu's Rachmanis on us, that we shouldn't suffer too much. Some, in later Sfarim, they understand that it's specifically to show that this is not about suffering. That even though we use the word inoy in the Torah, but inoy, even though that translates to suffering literally, but it's more of a technical term. And it doesn't mean suffering in the painful sense, but it means it has a technical translation of deprivation. But that's not meant to convey that we're actually in a sense of active discomfort. And therefore, the fact that we are able to eat beforehand, so to have reserves, so that we're not necessarily actually suffering, maybe that's encouraged and, in fact, commanded. Now, that's a part of it, and therefore, there's an interesting discussion about maybe B'davka, we don't have a parallel concept when it comes to Tisha B'Av. Moshe Schnerbach has discussion about that in one of his Sfarim, that maybe there's a fundamental difference between Tisha B'Av and Yom Kippur, in that Tisha B'Av is a sad day and Yom Kippur is not, even though they're both fast days. And that on Yom Kippur we fast, but it's not because we're trying to be miserable, we're trying to be angelic. So maybe we davka eat beforehand, so we show that the fasting is not about suffering, and that that's what we mean. We say ki'ilu hu'sana tshiv asiri, that the eating on the 9th is just as holy as the fasting on the 10th. So it's as if we fasted on the 9th, meaning we did the right thing both days. So our eating is holy on the 9th, just like our fasting is holy on the 10th. And that is distinct from Tisha B'Av, where Tisha B'Av we are looking to be miserable because that is when we are mourning the Korban. And we are regretting where we are at that time. So we don't find the din of Davka eating on Erev Tisha B'Av, although there is a discussion about it in some Sfarim, but it doesn't seem like it's the same. So Rav Sternbach argues that's because not the same, because that's the contrast, that Yom Kippur we're trying to show that we're not looking to be miserable, and on Tisha B'Av we are looking to be somewhat miserable. So we don't necessarily have this parallel. But it's also interesting, the language of the Ritva specifically, and I think this language is really particular to him, that he writes that the purpose of eating is shlo yavo lidei d'chiasinui, that we shouldn't come to have to be doche v'inui, meaning that if a person doesn't plan in advance, that he hasn't eaten enough before, so that he's going to find himself in a greatly weakened state on Yom Kippur, so much so that his health becomes compromised and he has to eat on Yom Kippur. So it could be that maybe it's going to be a pikuach nefesh situation, but that's not going to be properly thought out in advance. So the Torah is specifically giving you a mitzvah to say that you have to make sure not to let yourself get in that situation. Don't say, well, I didn't have time to eat in the time leading up to Yom Kippur, and now I'm in a compromised situation. I'm not healthy enough to fast on Yom Kippur because I didn't prepare in advance. That's not right. The Torah is saying you have to make sure to eat on Erev Yom Kippur so that you're not going to come to a state of Dechiyas Inui. There's a lot to explore about that concept. So first of all, we mentioned in Parsha Shir a few weeks ago, when we were talking about Parshas Kisavo and about the different brisos that were taken on the Torah, and the whole idea that there is a bris of Shmira on the Torah in addition of Asiya. So this is perhaps, we had to search then for examples of what could that mean, of a bris of Shmira in addition to actually keeping the Torah. And this might be one of the examples, even though you're not going to necessarily find the parallel example within every mitzvah. But the idea that sometimes there are efforts that need to be taken in advance to make sure that a mitzvah is kept. So this is actually nogeya to a very fascinating shaila that comes up regarding today. So today is Tzom Gedalia, and we're fasting for the most part today. And there is a fascinating discussion in Poskim, one of the more Leibedik Tzom Gedalia issues, that what happens if somebody has a checkup, has a examination by his doctor to see if he's healthy enough to fast, and the doctor tells him that yes, he's healthy enough to fast on Yom Kippur, but he's not healthy enough to fast twice in a week. So he's basically got to choose. So can he, if he's going to fast on Tzom Gedalia, he's not going to be healthy enough to fast on Yom Kippur. So on the one hand, if there was no concept of Tzom Gedalia, so we would say that a person who would randomly fast a week before Yom Kippur, when his doctor tells him that doing so would make it impossible to fast on Yom Kippur, would be doing the wrong thing as far as his religious obligations are concerned. That he should work to protect his ability to observe Yom Kippur. A person who's genuinely, unavoidably unhealthy on Yom Kippur and is unable to fast, so that person is forbidden to fast. But a person who's capable of preserving his capacity to fast in good health on Yom Kippur, so presumably is obligated to do so. And presumably, beyond the general obligation to preserve one's health, but also specifically regarding the obligation to Yom Kippur, if there's a short-term consideration in terms of preserving one's health specifically for Yom Kippur, so beyond the general obligation to preserve your health overall, but to preserve your capacity to fast on Yom Kippur, it makes sense to say that you're obligated to keep that as well. So if you have a specific medical condition where the doctor says you have to take extra care in the week before Yom Kippur, otherwise you're not going to be able to fast. Otherwise you can, but if you do certain things in this week before, you're not going to be able to. So it makes sense to say that you shouldn't do those things. So if there was no concept of Tzom Gedalia, and the doctor says you can't afford any extra food restriction before Yom Kippur, but otherwise you can fast, so then it makes sense to say that it's wrong to restrict yourself during that time if it would impact on Yom Kippur. But being that Tzom Gedalia is the thing, so then it becomes a question, so what do you do? Since Tzom Gedalia comes first, do you say, Ein ma'avir al ha-mitzvos? And you take things as it comes? Or do you say, come on, Yom Kippur is so clearly more important, and so clearly on a higher level of chiyuv and significance, that how can you tell me that I should sacrifice my Yom Kippur for Tzom Gedalia just because it comes first? So this was actually a major discussion in Poskim, and it seems counterintuitive to say that indeed, how could you trade Yom Kippur for Tzom Gedalia? But on the other hand, we do have this notion of Ein ma'avir al ha-mitzvos, and that you have to take one day at a time and look what's in front of you. And there is a sugi in the beginning of Maseches Ketubos that has the concept of ones b'takanas chachamim, that sometimes if somebody is in a situation of ones because he's following a din d'rabbanan, so we consider that to be ones. So here, if somebody is following the practice of fasting and Tzom Gedalia, so that would constitute a valid ones, it would seem, even as far as Yom Kippur is concerned. So that's why it's a significant discussion in Poskim how to address that. But saving the situation aside, where there is a chiyuv of Tzom Gedalia, but for a frivolous reason, if there wasn't an obligation like that in front of you, so it would seem like you have to take steps to make sure that you're not in a situation where you unnecessarily have to eat on Yom Kippur. So to decide, I'm going to climb Mount Everest on Yom Kippur, and then find yourself completely depleted because you just came down 10 minutes before. So that would clearly be wrong. So the Ritva's language here, that you have to eat, specifically the Torah is commanding you to eat, shol yavo lidei d'chiyas inui, is something very interesting to consider. Did you have a question about that?
No, sorry.
So it's also noteworthy that Rav Yosef Engel has a list in his Sefer Lekach Tov. He has a list, he has an essay there by the title Imatzinu Siag Min HaTorah. Do we ever find anywhere in the Torah where you have a din that's from the Torah itself, but it functions, as far as its purpose, like a din d'rabbanan, meaning that it seems to be there as a siag, as a safeguard. And he rattles off the top of his head a list of a whole bunch of examples where there is a din that's from the Torah, but it seems to be there, at least according to one interpretation or the other. It's usually a machlokas, the various din that he quotes, but at least according to one interpretation or the other, it's there to protect a different din than HaTorah. So he doesn't have this on his list, but it's interesting. This would seem to be an example. This ritva, that here, according to this ritva, this din min HaTorah of eating on Erev Yom Kippur is there as basically a safeguard to prevent you from violating the issur of eating on Yom Kippur itself. That's also unusual. It's not really a siag, it's a positive mitzvah. Although, it's also interesting, maybe one, this is also something we'll have to talk about, but how exactly you formulate this notion of eating on Yom Kippur, on Erev Yom Kippur rather. So if you want to formulate it really as an Isser Tainis, as it sounds like from some sugyas, so then it's a little more of a siag. You could say that there's an Isser to fast on Erev Yom Kippur because doing so may lead you to eat on Yom Kippur. You know, eat basically b'hachrach, to be forced in a situation where you're forced to eat, and therefore the Torah prohibited you from fasting on Erev Yom Kippur, so that you shouldn't come to be forced to eat on Yom Kippur itself. So this notion of hachana, that the eating on Erev Yom Kippur is a hachana for the fast, so that's a notion that you find in some of the Rishonim. Rashi sounds like that, and the Ritva has it in this formulation. And Rabbeinu Yonah, you saw Rabbeinu Yonah in the Shari Tshuva, so he actually quotes a number of interpretations in the Shari Tshuva. And this is one of them. We should also mention that there is a minority view that takes the same idea in the other direction. And the Torah Tumimah quotes this possibility based on a Gemara in Maseches Tainis, that maybe the whole concept goes the opposite way. And that it sounds like from the Gemara in Maseches Tainis that it's actually harder to fast when you're coming off of a day of feasting. And maybe that's the point. That if the Gemara says that this, for whatever reason, some purpose in being considered as if you fasted 2 days, so we don't fully understand why, but if there's a goal to be counted as if you fasted for 2 days, and we're assuming that it's not really practical to fast for 2 days. The Yerushalmi, I believe, has that idea. That's the whole discussion why we don't say Sveika D'Yoma by Yom Kippur. It's a little strange because we have Sveika D'Yoma by Rosh Hashanah and we have Sveika D'Yoma by Sukkot. So Yom Kippur is in between the two. So theoretically, you should have Sveika D'Yoma by Yom Kippur, but we're getting a very vigorous shaking of the head here because the idea of how do you fast 2 days. So the Yerushalmi discusses this and assumes that it's essentially a pikuach nefesh question. It's a kind of question to assume that you can fast 2 days. So that seems to be the policy. Although this was a practice that some took on during World War II, when the question of the international dateline was first discussed in a serious way. So that was the next question. So that question, which now is a more popularly discussed issue.
They did it in the mirror now.
Yeah, so...
You did Yom Kippur?
Yeah, so there were those...
like no breaks.
So not in Shanghai. Shanghai is not in Machlokes, but in Japan.
In Japan, yeah.
Right, so... Right, so some of the students from the mirror and others who were forced out of Europe into some of the time in Shanghai, but some of the time in Japan. So Japan is in an area which is subject to a machlokas between the Chazon Ish and B'chim Echel to Kaczynski as to what day it is. So for that year, when it was a suffix, how to assess when Yom Kippur was, so there were those who actually did hold 2 days Yom Kippur. So you think you have it rough, so you should just know. It can get worse. But as a matter of general world policy, so we don't say Sveika D'Yoma by Yom Kippur. So is there some mila to having Kiilu Hisanet Tisha B'Asiri? What exactly is the Gemara getting at? Again, this is something you see the Rishonim try to figure out. What's the Gemara saying? That there's some kind of goal here. So you could read it as saying that we're somehow trying to intensify the experience to make it feel like there's a 2-day fast. So that's what the Torah Tumah says. Maybe that's the point, that we were only going to fast for one day, but we want it to feel like 2 days. So maybe that's the way we do it, that if you eat beforehand in a greater than usual amount, then that's going to actually make it harder to transition to no eating at all. And maybe that's the purpose. Yes, sir.
So somewhat similarly, not very similarly, but kind of in a different kind of like kind of the time context in a way. I wonder if it's interesting of like, because Yom Kippur is like a very, we're very active on that fast, like we're, you know, we're supposed to be like in shul and standing a lot and like singing, maybe dancing, maybe in those kinds of places. So because we're supposed to be so active, is there any way to say that we need to eat a lot so we can have a day which we fast on, but we're so active it's as if we fasted 2 days in a row. Like we have to eat enough that we have the energy to, as if we're going to fast 2 days in a row. So that we use that much energy. That it's that difficult of a fast.
I wonder if that's different. I guess it's the same kind of idea.
It's somewhat the opposite, because that was saying that the fast is harder because we eat a lot. I mean, I kind of think it's, yeah, I don't agree with that necessarily. Like, I think it's easier to fast when you're on a full stomach. But in the sense that you have to eat a lot because of how hard of a fast it is, because it's so difficult. Like that's the reality. Like if you didn't eat, you wouldn't be able to have a labor the Yom Kippur, which might be
requires,
just one thing.
It requires a lot of energy.
It requires a lot of energy, and so like, you wouldn't really be able to have Yom Kippur if you need a lot. So eating a lot, it makes you able to have Yom Kippur, which is as if it's 2 days of fasting.
Okay.
Just from personal experience, I can say he's right. Last year I ate 2 pies of pizza and 2 full chickens, and I was not hungry all Yom Kippur.
Hopefully not in the same meal.
No. In the morning I had 2 pies.
That's a derisive. Chicken
delay
dirt
buns. Yes. Yeah. Okay.
That's wild.
It's not real pies.
All right, in any event, so to move on from that, so that's one possible theory, that there is some kind of a hachana for the tainus, and that it is a hachana probably to help, but then there's this one minority understanding that it's to hurt, so to speak, to make it more intense. But then there is this other view that Eric also mentioned before, that you find in the Rishonim, that really, Yom Kippur is a yontif, and it's a happy yontif. The Gemara says in Tainus that Yom Kippur was one of the 2 happiest days of the year, and in fact, out of the 2, it's the one that's more obviously a happy day, Yom Mechilu Slicha. So it's both a yontif in a technical sense, and it's a yontif in the mood sense. It's a happy day, so we should be celebrating. We should be grateful for this opportunity. So we should really have a Sudas Yantiv. But we have this slight technical issue of an Isserkartis for eating. So we have to find some way to get our Suda in without violating that Isserkartis that would come from eating on Yom Kippur. So perhaps that's the idea, that really there is a Suda to be had, but we have to push it up. So instead of having the Suda on Yom Kippur itself, so then we have the Suda on Erev Yom Kippur, and that's the idea. It's interesting, parenthetically, to note that there is a view in Rishonim, it's certainly less explicit than what we find about Erev Yom Kippur, but there is a view that there's also a notion of some kind of a mitzvah of eating on Motzei Yom Kippur also. And this, maybe we'll get a chance to see it, but we'll just mention it now as a little bit of a preview. That's also a sugi in Brachos. Maybe I should have put some of the makaros on this morning. Actually, it's a good thing to be aware of, because this is actually more of a Brachos sugi that the Gemara is going to discuss. There is a issue the Rishonim try to figure out that later on, well, earlier on, but later on when we do the Masechta out of order, that there is a concept of, so here I see the question about the first thing we do after Yom Kippur. So it's related to that, that the status of Ni'ila, this really would be actually maybe a good sugi to try to find time for Yom Kippur. So the Rishonim try to figure out about the status of Ni'ila, and it relates to the status of Ma'ariv, that the Gemara talks about what Ma'ariv should be classified as. And we understand that Ma'ariv is called a Rishus, even though in practice we consider it obligatory to daven Ma'ariv every night. But it has the status of somewhat in between. It's called a Rishus, even though that doesn't practically mean that it's optional. And the Gemara also says that Ne'ilah Puteres Shel Ma'ariv, that Ne'ilah, again, even though practically we daven both Ne'ilah and Ma'ariv, but then Ne'ilah can take the place of Ma'ariv. So the Rishonim try to figure out what that means, and that basically built on how the Rishonim understand the Rishus idea for Ma'ariv, that it's somewhat optional, but not really optional, that we do have to say it. So in the context of that discussion, so the Rishonim write that Ma'ariv really is something that we've taken on as an obligation, and it's somewhat less than fully obligatory, but we shouldn't neglect it without some kind of a mitzvah reason. So the Rishonim discussed the possibility, which again doesn't really translate to our practice today, but discussed the possibility that maybe Motzei Yom Kippur, Ma'ariv could be set aside or replaced by Ne'ilah because of the mitzvah imperative at that time of having a meal. So the assumption that there's a mitzvah on that end too, of the meal on Motzei Yom Kippur, is alluded to by the Rishonim. That's also something interesting to explore. So there is this idea, perhaps, that there is a Simchas Yontif that needs to find an expression somewhere, and that maybe the purpose of this eating is to fill that goal, that we need to have Simchas Yontif on Yom Kippur. We didn't get much time to discuss it, but there is a whole discussion about the Chiyuv Simcha on Rosh Hashanah. And Rosh Hashanah, it's a good question how exactly it fits into the whole mode of the Abiyam Tovim. And the truth is, really, Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur are not as different as they seem as far as that's concerned. So even though they seem pretty different, because Rosh Hashanah, in our experience, we have celebratory meals, on Yom Kippur we fast, but they're closer together than they seem. So meaning that on Rosh Hashanah, the Chiyuv Suda is less obvious than it may seem from our practice. And on Yom Kippur, the role of a meal is more present than it may seem. So the space between the two, which they seem very different to us in our practice, Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, but they may be closer together than they seem. And the idea that there's some kind of a simcha that connects them is actually a possibility. So the notion that we should have some kind of a Simchas Yontif for Yom Kippur, and Meiri has an interesting discussion actually where he says that there is a Chi of Oneg on Yom Kippur, and therefore we have a greater emphasis on nice clothes on Yom Kippur, because since it doesn't find as much of an expression in the Suda, so therefore it has to express itself in other ways. But perhaps the Suda does have a kiyum in what takes place on Erev Yom Kippur. So this essentially gives us at least two ways to understand the purpose of eating on Erev Yom Kippur. Again, if you look at later Svarim, you'll find many more, or you'll find combinations of these ideas. But there are at least these two major theories that these are included among them, that the eating on Erev Yom Kippur is some kind of a hachana for Yom Kippur itself, probably in the sense of making it easier or more likely that you'll be able to finish the fast successfully, or that it's meant to be a sudas yontif, meant to be a celebration of what should be the joyous atmosphere of Yom Kippur. And given that we cannot eat on Yom Kippur itself, it's meant to serve that purpose. So, what might be some nafkaminas of these two different understandings? Yes, sir. Did you?
Whether women are chayvim?
Okay, very good. So that is
kids that are going to fast in Yom Kippur.
Okay.
Because if it's they're under bar mitzvah. But if it's minhag one of the three before and they're fasting Yom Kippur, then it becomes a mitzvah because it's a hachana for the mitzvah.
Okay, that's good. The women one for sure is one.
Right, women as well.
I will come back to that in a second. You're right about kids also. Any other suggestions? What might be nafkamina? So, the women one is a very prominent one, so we'll come back to that in a second. But any other suggestions? I mean, it may affect what type of eating. Mm-hmm. Right, so we're talking about, wow, should it be suda-ish, you know, and should it have the requirements of the suda? Yeah.
Also, if the chiyuv of this starts night before.
So that, yes, so there is a discussion. It's a little bit of a frustrating discussion because that's one of the more kind of artificial nafkamina-ish discussions, because you'll find in the literature those who say it's totally on that, but you want to try to take it to the next step and articulate how it's totally on that.
Maybe because if it's a din suis yomtov, the mitzvah doesn't apply yet, but if it's a din it could go either way.
That's the problem, right, exactly, right. Right. So that's where it's one of those.
I mean, biologically, if you eat a lot the night before, it'll make it easier. So, I mean, but also if you eat 2 days before, it'll make it easier.
That's the frustrating part. So, right, you'll find that in the literature both ways. So, so that could cut both ways, but theoretically, you're right that question certainly comes up, and that question has been linked to this issue, even though it theoretically could be linked in both ways. But yes, you're theoretically correct. Yes.
Someone who would not have to fast, if it's a chana, then there's no real mitzvah because then they can't fast anyways. But if it was just a chiyuv on eating on that day, then you'd still have to eat that time because it's the mitzvah.
Correct. All right, so that should also be related. Any other issues? So all of these points have been brought up. It's also a discussion that Siv has in his conversations, in his essays on the Shiltas, that the reason that there's no bracha on this, while we're learning brachos, the reason there's no bracha on the mitzvah of eating on Erev Yom Kippur is because essentially it's just there as a preparation for something else. So therefore we don't view it as an independent mitzvah, which should get its own bracha. That's also a discussion that comes up. So again, the nature of what kind of food we're talking about is suda. We're talking about more things that will keep you going. That also then gets into some kind of very detailed specifics. But to draw specifically on some of the points that you made, so Rabbi Akiva Eiger has been a prominent part of a lot of our recent sugyas. So he was very significant in the Shofar and Shabbos sugya, and he's very, very prominent in the Bracha Vatala sugyas, so, and the very prominent in the Safek Bracha sugya. So I guess we're very faithful to Rabbi Akiva Eiger this month, since it comes up in every sugya prominently. So he's very prominent in this sugya also. So he has a tshuva, and there are others who have similar tshuvas, but Rabbi Akiva Eiger was apparently asked by a woman who was a chola, and she wasn't planning, therefore, on fasting on Yom Kippur. So the question was, should she be obligated to eat on Erev Yom Kippur if she's not planning on fasting on Yom Kippur itself? Now, again, the situation is a little bit strange, because if you're not planning on fasting on Yom Kippur because of your illness, so then what kind of eating do you find difficult to do on Erev Yom Kippur? You'd have to assume that it's a more elaborate kind of eating that you're worried about then, but whatever it is. So technically speaking, that was the question. If this woman is not going to be fasting on Yom Kippur, is she chayeves in this obligation of eating on Erev Yom Kippur? So the way he addressed the issue is, yeah?
I mean, I would say that according to either reason, the answer is no.
Oh, and
because if it's just prepared for the fast and you're not preparing for the fast, it's just so you can eat on Yom Kippur, have the suda sense on Yom Kippur itself.
Oh, that's so you almost had it.
Because she wouldn't be chayv in it?
Oh, that's either way. So, yeah, so your way was different. So he said that she's off the hook either way, but not like that. He said that she's off the hook either way, mimonashach. Now, the truth is, the Miman of Shach is a little bit too neat, but basically, the idea was, and there are others, again, who took the same basic perspective, but it's a little bit too clean, but essentially, the story's like this, that if you assume that there are only two possibilities to this din, that it's either to prepare for the fast, or it is a Suda Siyantiv. So then, you could say that if it's to prepare for the fast, so then If you're not fasting, you should be pater. And if it's a sudas yantif, then it's a mitzvah sasei shazman grama. And therefore, I mean, manav shach, she's pater. Because if it's prepared for the fast, she's the chola and she's not fasting. And if it's an independent mitzvah of a sudas yantif, then she's an isha and she's paturas from mitzvah sasei shazman grama. So that was the approach she took, and there are others who took that approach as well. Again, it's a little bit too glatt because, first of all, there were those who argued the Ksav Sofer's Chupetas also, that still to say that you're a pater if you're not planning on fasting, so, you know, who knows what will happen, so to say that you're for sure you won't be fasting, maybe you'll get better. So to rule out 100% that you shouldn't have to participate on eating an Erev Yom Kippur, maybe you could argue. But also to say, Mimanav Shachir, you'd have to say you're sure these are the only two ways of looking at it. And that's also maybe a little bit too absolute. But it's a interesting perspective anyway. Just to add, maybe just one more note, that this question about the Chiyuv of Nashim. So there is a fascinating discussion about this in the Torah Tamima. And the Torah Tamima discusses that he assumes women are chayavos in this mitzvah. And he says that that's the only way he can understand the Gemara in Beitza and Daf Lamed, which I don't think I put on your list, but I should have put on. You can take a look afterwards. That the Gemara has what seems to be a very difficult statement, a very perhaps insulting statement to women over there. That there is a discussion of the concept of mutav shushogin value mezidin. That there is a notion that sometimes we say, we don't always apply this, but sometimes we say that if somebody's going to violate an avera either way, so better not to tell them about the avera, because that way they'll only violate a pishogeg, rather than to inform them about the avera that they're going to still violate, and then they'd be violating it b'mezid. So regarding that, the Gemara says in Beitza that the din of Tosefes Inui and Yom Kippurim, which means that you have to start the fast a little bit earlier. So for some reason, the Gemara says that you shouldn't tell the women about this, because they're not going to listen to you, they're not going to start the fast early, and Mutav Shushayigim V'al Yumazid. So Teret Mima has a discussion over there. Why are we so offensive to the women here? Why are we so sure that they're not going to listen, and they're going to refuse to stop eating early? So the Torah Tumima has a comment over there. He says, this must be a raya that women are chayavos in the mitzvah of eating on Erev Yom Kippur. And therefore, that's why the Gemara is worried that they're not going to listen. So we mentioned at the beginning that there could theoretically be a tension between these two dinim that come from the same pasuk, the idea of eating on Erev Yom Kippur and Tosefes Inui, even if they're not absolutely mutually exclusive, they certainly are somewhat of a trade-off. One has to come at the expense of the other, even if they're not absolutely eliminating each other, but you have to stop one to start the other. So here, if you assume that women are chayavos, so then he says you could understand there'll be a special chavivus for this mitzvah, not because you're hungry, but because women are so rarely obligated in mitzvah sasesha as man grama. So here, for whatever reason, the chayavos, so here you have a rare mitzvah sasesha as man grama that women are chayavos in. There's going to be a special appreciation for this mitzvah, and it's going to be very hard to give it up. So therefore, it's only for that reason that the Gemara says that there's going to be a hesitancy. It comes from the chavivus ha-mitzvah, and otherwise we would never have such a chashad. And that's how he understands what that Gemara is getting at. That's a fascinating perspective. Hi.
Is it possible we can get through the mitzvah both the siyag and the mitzvah sasei shazman grama? Because really it's a siyag, but the way it functions is an asei shazman grama.
Yes, absolutely. Which is also, again, goes to the question, it's hard to necessarily be so confident that there's absolute categories, and part of it has to do with interpretation of the reasons and the format. So for sure you're right that that's a possibility. And as we see here, there are many other possible interpretations also. And we'll just note, I gave you also the Kli Yachar to look at, but one way or another, what emerges from here, and the Kli Yachar points to the point also, but that's one of the major takeaways here as we sit here on Tzom Gedalia, and we alluded to before the Shaila that discusses the impact of Tzom Gedalia on Yom Kippur, but one of the major premises of this whole discussion is that as we look towards Yom Kippur, Yom Kippur doesn't start when Yom Kippur starts. Yom Kippur starts during this time as we look towards Yom Kippur, and during all of the Asar Simei Tshuva, we are very much in the mode of preparing for Yom Kippur, and all of these days leading up are highly significant for how Yom Kippur will play out, whether it's Erev Yom Kippur or whether it's all of the days of the Asar Simei Tshuva. The decisions that we make and the steps that we take will impact how successful Yom Kippur is, whether it's about our endurance, whether it's about the spiritual preparedness that we have. So we need to be highly attuned to the impact that all of the hours between now and Yom Kippur will have on the effectiveness on our Yom Kippur. And as we have this kind of practice fast for a week from today, and as we spend these next few hours in the much more limited version of what next week is going to be like, so we should continue to prepare ourselves mentally for the major event and to recognize that we have a lot of work to do, and we should try to take advantage of every minute and every hour between now and then, and but also recognize that the message of Simcha, I think we spoke a little bit about in the context of Rosh Hashanah, that the Simcha that characterizes Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, which is different than that of Sukkot and the Regalim, is that if ultimately we do go through the protocol properly, then we should have a confidence in the process and hope that we can look forward to a year of bracha and a year in which HaKadosh Baruch Hu will welcome us through to the other end, and we should hope for a year of success and happiness, and our tshuva should be accepted with grace. Mm-hmm. So, looking forward, God willing, again tomorrow we'll get more information about how we'll be able to participate in this year, and look forward to continuing the Torah Simei Tshuva with a lot more Torah and Tefillah and Staka, and we should be successful in all ways.